This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll touch on the ACC preseason poll and what it means for the conference this year. Plus, which teams will be in the playoffs, which teams in the NFL are way off the playoff path. We'll get to that coming up. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcast. And the podcast is available online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page. Find the show podcasted there. You can also leave a comment for the show at charlestonsportsradio.com by clicking on our show page. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Or on the phones, 843-721-9500. The Atlanta Braves are playing right now, finishing up their series with the Phillies here this afternoon. A little day baseball, and they're scoreless heading to the second inning. Today is kind of the 11-year anniversary of that 19-inning win the Braves had in July of 2011 against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, technically, yesterday would have been the anniversary of the game, but it finished after midnight. So it finished on this day 11 years ago. So we could say today is the anniversary of at least the moment in which they won in the bottom of the 19th to beat the Pirates 4-3. You may remember that game if you're a Braves fan. Maybe you stayed up for it. Maybe you remember waking up the next day to see how long the game went and realize it went 19 innings. And what's crazy about it is nobody scored from the third inning until the 19th. So you want to talk about, you know, potentially a boring game where you go 15 innings without a single run from either side. And the Braves won in the bottom of the 19th, but you may recall it seemed to be such a horrendous call at the plate. The umpires at that point probably just wanted to get out of there. The game took 6 hours and 39 minutes, and it was literally 2 a.m. here Eastern time, right on the dot, 2 a.m. exactly when the Braves won the game. The umpires probably thought, we are not going to a 20th inning. It was a ground ball to third. Runner was coming home. They threw it to the plate. The throw clearly beat the runner. And the umpires called Julio Lugo, who unfortunately just passed away within the last few months, within the last year. Julio Lugo was the Atlanta Braves sliding in. It was a force play. And the umps called him safe. You can go find the video online. You may recall when it happened 11 years ago. It looks like he's clearly out. Clint Hurdle and the Pirates coaching staff went ballistic. This was before you could challenge. And that was the end of the game, and the Braves won after almost 7 hours of baseball at 2 a.m. in 19 innings on what looked to be a terrible call at the plate. And whoever put the ball in play also stumbled. He fell out of the batter's box. There was only one out. It was second and third. They're coming home on a ground ball. If the umpire properly called the play, they probably would have gotten the out at first as well because the guy fell down. So it was, Scott Proctor was the pitcher, the relief pitcher was batting because they had nobody left on the bench. So you had second and third, one out, bottom of the 19th. Proctor falls down as he hits a grounder to third. They looked like they got the out at home and then probably would have thrown it to first. We would have gone to 20 innings. It would have been a weird inning-ending double play because Proctor fell down. You're not used, if you're a relief pitcher, used to running the bases. He stumbled out of the box and fell on his face. Julio Lugo comes sliding in, apparently beats the tag. The Braves won in 19 innings. So there you go, 11 years ago today. I'll be honest, I don't really remember that one. I remember around that same time, the Mets and I think it was the Cardinals played about 20 innings. And I was out at the bar, and that was perfect. That was the year prior, 2010. It was a day game, now that I'm looking it up. Started at 3:15, and it took 7 hours, and they went 20 innings. So that game ended around just after 10. So it was perfect. The game's at 3:00. I was with a bunch of Mets fans. It was a Saturday. We said, let's go out for the night. The game was still going out. We went out to the bar. It was going on until 10. It was perfect. 7 hours of Mets baseball to keep us entertained. And eventually the Mets beat the Cardinals in 20 innings. I remember where I was for that game. I don't remember the Braves game the next summer. Braves-Pirates, 19 innings, went to 2 a.m. Maybe you recall staying up for it. And then the kicker was the very next night, they went to extra innings again. And if you are an umpire, a broadcaster, maybe even a player at that point, you're thinking, oh, geez, here we go again. The very next night, the two teams went to extras, and the Braves ended up walking that off in 10. That's a tough trip to Atlanta if you're Pittsburgh. You lose in 19, and then you lose in 11 or in 10 innings the next night. I'm sure they couldn't wait to get out of town. So the 11-year anniversary of a 19-inning game for the Braves, one of the longest baseball games ever. And right now, the Braves-Phillies playing scoreless in the second. Hey, we closed out last hour. Talk about Kyle Pitts with this idea that the Falcons are going to the playoffs and maybe even competing for a Super Bowl this year. According to ESPN's NFL Football Power Index, the Falcons have the fifth-worst odds of making the playoffs this year, just a 19% chance. They have the fourth-worst odds of making the Super Bowl, less than a 1% chance of winning the Super Bowl. So I figured, based off of the comments, based off of the FPI projections, let's run through a few teams. We'll determine if they are playoff teams or if they are way off, playoffs or way off, for these NFL teams. We'll run through about a dozen of them, and I'll let you know if I think they're heading to the playoffs this year or if they're way off from the postseason. We'll call it playoffs or way off. Oh, yeah. Got a list of about 12. I'll also give you the FPI projection for ESPN's analytics and computer model of what they predict. I'll give you my answer on these teams. We got about a dozen. Let's run through if these teams are heading to the playoff or if they're way off.
Playoff or way off. First one, Indianapolis Colts, Luke Morrow.
Playoffs. I think they win the division. ESPN's FPI gives them a 61% chance of making the playoffs, which is actually fifth best in the NFL this year. When you look at that division, it's going to come down to the Colts and the Titans. And if you've listened to the show, you know I've never been all that high in the Titans. I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop, for that window to close. They've won the division. Four straight years they made the playoffs now? I just don't trust Ryan Tannehill, never have. He played terribly in the playoffs, and now you don't have A.J. Brown, and you have Derrick Henry coming off an injury. Who knows what we're going to get out of him? I think the Titans' offense is going to take a step back from a year ago. For the Colts, should have been a playoff team last year at Carson Wentz. Were a playoff team with Phillip Rivers. Now you plug in Matt Ryan, who's similar to those last two guys. I think they win enough to win the division. It may only take 10 games. Go to the playoffs. I say the Colts are a playoff team.
Playoff or way off, the Los Angeles Chargers.
Chargers also have a 61% chance, according to FPI. That's the sixth best. I have to say playoffs. Right? I don't think Justin Herbert's going to miss the playoffs three straight years. Brandon Staley's job probably depends on it. And they came one play away from making it last year. I do think the Chargers are a better team than the Raiders, maybe still better than the Broncos. They're in a tough division, but they have a playoff roster. They've had a playoff roster. And they have a really good quarterback in Justin Herbert. The big concern last year was Staley and maybe some of his decisions, how aggressive he was with the use of analytics and going for it on fourth down. Maybe that will be better. This year, they also had a pretty good offseason, making some good moves on the defense specifically. I don't think the Chargers win the division, but I do think they're a playoff team because I'll just take my odds. I'll take my chances that Justin Herbert's not going to go 3 years without making the playoffs. I think the Chargers get in this year.
The Cleveland Browns, playoffs or way off?
Well, they're not way off. That's too strong of a word, right? But for the sake of the exercise, I will say the Cleveland Browns are not a playoff team. I'll say way off as opposed to playoffs. Because I think even if Deshaun Watson misses even just eight games, if he misses half the season, essentially, I think that could keep Cleveland out in a tough AFC. The FPI projections give the Browns a 57% chance of making the playoffs, which is top 10. But that's a big drop-off when you lose Deshaun for half of the season. And then once Deshaun returns, he will have not played for almost two full calendar years. So I think in year one this year, I'll say way off for the Browns. Not a playoff team this year because of everything going on with Deshaun Watson.
The Let's Ride Denver Broncos. Playoffs or way off?
I'm a big Russell Wilson guy. I like the Broncos, but it's tough. I look at that division. I do think the Chargers are better. I do think the Chiefs are better. The AFC is really tough. Can one division, as good of a division as it is, can one division get three teams in the playoff field by themselves? Then you have Russell Wilson, who I think it was mostly because of the finger injury, but wasn't great last year. And you have Nathaniel Hackett, who's never been a head coach before. Now, the numbers tell us over the past 15 years, we usually get 7 new head coaches a year, and on average, 2 of them go to the playoffs. So when you look at new head coaches this year, which 2 could go to the playoffs? Maybe Nathaniel Hackett is one of them. Again, way off's probably too strong of a word, but I think the Broncos may be on the outside looking in that division. I'll say the Chiefs and the Chargers make the playoffs from the AFC West. I don't think they get 3 teams because the AFC is that good and that division's that tough that the Titans will have a better chance to maybe win more games in their lousy division. Maybe the Dolphins could win more games in the AFC East than what the Broncos have to deal with. ESPN's FPI gives them a 56% chance of making the playoffs. I'll say they are not a playoff team this year.
Your Minnesota Vikings, playoffs or way off?
They are given a 54% chance. They're a playoff team this year. They won 8 games a year ago. I think the addition of Kevin O'Connell will be big for that team. They were essentially a top 10 offense a year ago. The big concern is their defense. Still probably will be bad, especially in the secondary. But the NFC is so wide open. We can only pencil in probably 4 teams, if that, to be a playoff team. I mean, the Packers, Buccaneers, Rams, you feel good about those 3. That's about it. I have questions about even the Cowboys. If the 49ers go with Trey Lance, I don't know if they're a playoff team. So almost by default, I would think the Vikings could be a top 7 team. Can you be in the top half of the NFC? I think the coaching change could have that big of an impact. They got plenty of talent on offense. Bill Barnwell gave them the 4th best roster for skill players. The Vikings are getting back to the playoffs this year.
No surprises there. Next one here, Luke, the Cardinals, playoffs or way off?
I'll say playoffs. I look at that division, the Rams are the favorites. I think the Cardinals could be the 2nd best team. The Cardinals with Kyler Murray, I would probably put them ahead of the Niners with Trey Lance. And we'll get to the Niners coming up. But I think Arizona will probably be the 2nd best team in the division. They made the playoffs a year ago. And if you're the 2nd best team in the NFC West, you should be a playoff team because the rest of the NFC is so weak. The Cardinals are given a 54% chance, according to ESPN's FPI, to make the playoffs. I think they're a playoff team. By the way, plus, now you get Kyler Murray actually studying film. Should only make him better and the team better. And they made the playoffs last year without Kyler doing anything. So I think the Cardinals will be a playoff team this year. They've gotten better. Better record each of the first 3 years of Cliff and Kyler. I think they may take another step forward this year. I'll put the Cardinals in the playoffs.
The Mac Jones-led New England Patriots, are they playoffs or way off?
This is a tough one. ESPN's FBI gives them a 51% chance, so pretty much a coin flip. Obviously, they were a playoff team a year ago, but the Dolphins should be better this year. The Jets could even be a little bit better. I'm not telling you a playoff team, but just another tough team in that division. And for the Patriots, a lot of people expect them to take a step back. Man, when I look at the AFC, I don't think the Patriots are going to win the division. So now you talk about wild cards, and you're going to be dealing with maybe the Titans, the Dolphins, the Chargers, the Broncos. And then, oh, you also have the Browns, either the Ravens or the Bengals. There's so many teams in the AFC. I'm going to say way off. Maybe they aren't way off, but they are not going to be a playoff team. They're just, the AFC is so tough. We'll see what Mac Jones does in year 2. There's, of course, concerns that the Patriots don't have any coordinators on the coaching staff. It's hard to ever doubt Bill Belichick. I never do. But when I look at the AFC, there are just so many teams to choose from that could be wild cards that I'm going to take my chances that the Patriots don't get in. I think that's the safer bet, that I'll bet on those other teams in the AFC over Mac Jones and the lack of weapons they have on offense in New England. So the Patriots, not in the playoffs. I'll say way off.
Next one here, the Jimmy Winston-led New Orleans Saints. Are they playoffs or way off?
They have a 49% chance of making the playoffs. Again, the NFC is weak enough. The Saints should be the 2nd best team in the division. Michael Thomas just returned today. That's going to be huge. They got weapons. As long as Jameis Winston can play well enough, losing Sean Payton is going to be the biggest loss the Saints have to deal with. But you have Landry and Kamara and Michael Thomas, and you have Dennis Allen coming back to lead that defense. They should beat the Falcons both times, should beat the Panthers twice. Bad NFC. If you look at wild cards in the NFC, right, you're looking at the Cardinals or the Niners, pretty much just the Saints, maybe the Vikings, and then maybe the Eagles, maybe the Commanders. It's a short field. I'm sure somebody will surprise us this year, but when I look at the NFC, I think it's pretty wide open. I'll say the Saints are a playoff team.
Next one here, Luke. The Las Vegas Raiders, led by Hall of Famer Derek Carr. Playoffs or way off?
I'll say way off. They just snuck in a year ago, and that was one of those seasons that it just seemed like everything was going their way. You rarely, if ever, see an interim coach take over and lead a team to the playoffs. That was the first time it's ever happened, in fact, where the coach also coached the team to the playoffs. Bruce Arians with the Colts was close, filling in for Chuck Pagano, but Pagano came back. He was just filling in. It was the first time we fired a coach. Interim coach steps in midseason, gets the team to the playoffs as the guy. Plus, they had all sorts of fourth quarter comebacks. They snuck by against the Chargers in Week 18. And while they added Devontae Adams and Josh McDaniels this year, that division's a lot tougher. The AFC is a lot tougher. And I don't know about McDaniels. He didn't work in Denver. I think the Raiders win fewer games this year. I think they miss the playoffs.
Next one here, the Trey Lance-led San Francisco 49ers. Playoffs or way off?
ESPN's FPI only gives them a 39% chance of making the playoffs, so I guess they're kind of in line with me. If it's Jimmy Garoppolo, I say playoffs. If it's Trey Lance, I say way off. Kyle Shanahan has not had a winning season without Jimmy Garoppolo. And if you look, Garoppolo's won like two-thirds of his starts. They've lost two-thirds of their starts without him. So say what you will about Garoppolo, but we've seen his worth. There's a big difference between all the other guys. And when it comes to Trey Lance, we get these stories about, you know, trying to change his mechanics, his throwing motion. He has some good days. He has some bad days because he's working through it. It's a little inconsistent right now. I just can't trust that. I think they may be the third best team in the division. I trust Kyler Murray more with the Cardinals. The Rams obviously are better. And even though the NFC is wide open, I don't know if the NFC West will get three teams in by themselves. So if it's Garoppolo, I'm saying playoffs. If it's Trey Lance, which it appears to be, the Niners kind of said so yesterday. I'll say way off. I just don't think he's ready yet as a first-year starting quarterback to lead them to the playoffs.
The Washington Commanders, playoffs or way off?
It's another tough one because, again, think of the potential teams that could be competing for wild cards in the NFC. There's not a bunch of them. I would put the Commanders on that list. Plus, when you look at the NFC East, we have not had a repeat champion in 18 years. I have plenty of questions about the Cowboys, even the Eagles. Could the Commanders now with Carson Wentz step up? You replace Taylor Heinicke with Carson Wentz. See if the defense is much like the version from 2 years ago. You have a Super Bowl a head coach in terms of at least getting to the Super Bowl. The Commanders are given a 37% chance of making the playoffs. I'm going to say playoff team. I put them in the playoffs. I think they'll get a wild card, if not win the NFC East. And I think they'll be one of the better teams in the NFC this year because you have that good defense. Carson Wentz played really well last year up until the final month of the season, and he almost got the Colts in the playoffs. The NFC won't be as good as the AFC a year ago, so I think Carson Wentz could lead the Commanders to the playoffs, and he may even have better weapons in Washington than he had in Indianapolis. So give me the Commanders in the playoffs.
Last one here, Luke. The Miami Dolphins, led by our guy Mike McDaniel. Are they playoffs or wayoffs?
Another tough one. 35% chance, according to ESPN's FPI, of making the playoffs. All right, when you look at the AFC, I put them in that same boat as the Patriots. And which one do I trust more? I would trust Belichick more than McDaniel. I trust Mac Jones more than Tua right now. Now, Tua is surrounded by more talent, but I still need to see the quarterback make plays. So when I look at the AFC and you're looking at potential wild cards, again, you have, if we assume the Chiefs win the division, you have the Chargers and the Broncos and maybe the Raiders. If the Colts or the Titans, whichever team doesn't win the division, the other one I imagine will compete for a wild card spot. And then in the North, whichever team wins the division, the other two will compete for a wild card as well between the Browns and the Ravens, and the Bengals. Then you get to the AFC East. I imagine the Bills win the division, and then it comes down to the Dolphins and the Patriots. So it is a tough field in the AFC. Tua is on the lower end. If you were to rank all those quarterbacks, Tua would maybe be last. If you were to rank head coaches, well, McDaniel's just unproven. He would be towards the bottom of the list. So I think there's still too many big questions with the Dolphins. I'll say they miss the playoffs. But as I mentioned earlier, on average, two out of the seven first-year head coaches make the playoffs in their first year. Could it be a McDaniel? Could it be a Nathaniel Hackett in Denver? Could it somehow be Doug Peterson in Jacksonville? There's always some sort of big surprise. You look at the new coaches, Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, I think maybe he could be a playoff coach year one. You look at the new coaches, on average, two out of seven usually get to the playoffs in the first year. We'll see who they are this year. Maybe it is Mike McDaniel in Miami, but I'm going to say way off, no playoffs. You know, I never want to take this stuff as gospel, the power index on ESPN.com, but some of these numbers really surprise me. The Cowboys have the third best chance. Maybe I'm bearing the lead here. Let me say the Bills have the best chance to make the playoffs, 75%. Packers are number two, 71%. The Cowboys are third at 70%. I find that hard to believe. That division to me is wide open. Again, haven't had a repeat champion in 18 years. I think the Cowboys had one of the worst off seasons in the NFL. To put them ahead of the Rams, who just won a Super Bowl, right, to put them ahead of the Buccaneers in that bad division, I don't agree there. I don't know if the Cowboys even make the playoffs, let alone win that division this year. Mike McCarthy was already answering questions yesterday about his job status. Right, there's a lot of drama around Dallas. And Dak Prescott's been at his best when he's had a really good offensive line and when Ezekiel Elliott was at the top of his game, and he has neither this year. So I got a lot of questions about Dallas. Then you look elsewhere in the list. I'm surprised the Browns still have a 57% chance, which is eighth best, because the Deshaun Watson situation is a real question. The Chiefs are only given a 55% chance, which is a half percent, not even. It's a few percentage points in front of my Minnesota Vikings. Now, look, the Vikings have an easier division and conference, but still. You're telling me the Chiefs and the Vikings have the same playoff odds this year? I find that hard to believe. And I'm a Vikings fan. I trust the Chiefs a lot more, even in that tough division. And then when you get further down on this list, the Bengals have only a 46% chance of making the playoffs.
That's ridiculous.
Behind the Raiders.
That's absurd. That's absolutely absurd. They only got better this offseason as far as roster, you know, additions go.
Right behind them, the Titans, only a 42% chance. Dolphins, 37%. So a lot of surprises on this list. Now, again, look, it's not gospel. I don't know how accurate it even is year by year. It's based off of a computer and analytics and projections and all that sort of stuff. But really some surprises to me on these rankings. I think the Cowboys are given too much credit. The Colts probably are even given too much credit. The Browns. And I think this computer model is underrating the Chiefs. They have the Chiefs as the third best team in the division. I know a lot of people are down because Tyreek Hill's gone. I don't know if it makes a big difference. Bengals have less than a coin flip chance of making the playoffs. Titans, too. The Niners. Dolphins. We'll see. By the way, if you're a Panthers fan, the Panthers have a 26% chance of making the playoffs, which is seventh worst. And I already told you the Falcons are at 19%. That's fifth worst. So maybe don't expect too much from those two teams this year, regardless of what Kyle Pitts had to say yesterday about his Falcons. When we come back, we have the ACC preseason poll. I'll share it with you if you haven't seen it, but also what it says. The biggest thing I take away from this poll heading into the ACC football season. We'll get to that next. The Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We have ourselves the ACC preseason poll. We'll run through it, and I'll let you know the big takeaway, what it means for the upcoming year here on the Morrow Midday Show. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Search ESPN Radio Charleston however you listen to your podcasts. To always find the show in full, podcasted right there. ACC preseason poll. It may be better to look at than hear, you know, run down on the radio, but quickly, if we go through this thing, and I gave you my predictions for each conference on the show last week, you can always find that on the podcast. In the Atlantic Division, Clemson picked to finish first. No surprise there. Followed by NC State, Wake Forest. I had the same top three. And then Louisville, Florida State, Boston College, and Syracuse. In terms of first place votes, Clemson got 111 first place votes to win the Atlantic. Followed by NC State with 44. Wake Forest got 6 first-place votes. Florida State 2. Boston College even got 1. In the Coastal Division, they have Miami finishing first, followed by Pittsburgh, North Carolina, Virginia, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, and Duke. I believe I had the same exact order. Miami got 98 first-place votes compared to 38 for Pittsburgh, 18 for UNC, 6 for Virginia, 3 for Virginia Tech, 1 for Georgia Tech. Then lastly, overall champion. Clemson picked to win the ACC overall, not just the Atlantic, but they got the most votes to win the actual conference. They had 103 of the 164 total votes. After that, NC State finished second with 38. Miami had 8 votes, Wake Forest 4, Pittsburgh and Virginia 3, Florida State, UNC 2, Boston College 1 to win the ACC. The preseason poll. Now, if you go back and look, preseason polls, right, we know aren't all that accurate. But based off of this, Clemson, Miami in the conference championship game, which is what I picked last week, I think most people would say that. Here's what stood out to me, though. When you look at the ACC, I said this last week when we were going conference by conference. In fact, a week ago today was when we were looking at the ACC. I think the ACC could be really interesting this year. I think the ACC could be more open or have more competitors this year than we're used to. And so when you look at the polling here, and maybe everyone's in the same boat as me and we're all just wrong. Who knows? We'll find out as the season goes on. But just based off of the polling, you have 9 different teams picked to actually win the ACC. Not their division, not just to get to the conference champ, but to actually win the ACC. Now, Clemson does have the majority of the votes, more than half. But 9 different schools getting picked to win the ACC. When you look at the Atlantic Division, 5 out of 7 schools got votes to win the Atlantic Division. When you look at the Coastal, we know about Coastal chaos. It's the most unpredictable division. 6 out of 7 schools got a vote to win the Coastal. Now, we could argue if this is because the teams are better or they're worse. Is it going to be unpredictable? Do the voters believe any of these teams could win because everyone's just that bad? Or the opposite? Have programs been elevating themselves? It's wide open that it'd be a good thing for the ACC, how unpredictable it is, and the fact that a lot of people have different picks for their champion of this conference. See, I tend to lean towards the positive side. I look at it as a good thing. I think this makes the ACC more interesting, and I think it's because a few teams are better or will be better this year than we're used to. Now, sure, Clemson being perceived to take a slight step back, being perceived to be not as good as they were these past few years, overall is probably a negative for the ACC. Right? The King may not be as strong as they once were just these last few years. Opens the door for others. Last year we saw Pittsburgh and Wake Forest step through the open door. But this year when you look at the ACC, I think it's more about the other schools. And while Clemson's come back to the pack a little bit, we believe, we'll see how things play out this year, but that's the idea and the perception. I also think the other teams have elevated themselves as well. NC State's really intriguing. I've been talking about them all offseason. But they have a good quarterback in Devin Leary, longtime head coach, a coaching staff that did not change at all this offseason. And they're bringing back more starters than anybody in the conference. They have more continuity than anyone. Wake Forest has maybe the best quarterback in the conference based off of last year and who's coming back and expectations. And they won the Atlantic a year ago. Then you have Louisville, where Louisville may not have high expectations, but they could be intriguing because they have a quarterback who is heading into his 5th year and is older than everybody else and can be a two-way playmaker. And Boston College, I wouldn't pick to win the Atlantic, but I told you this last week when we were previewing the ACC. Boston College could be intriguing this year too. I really like their quarterback. And when you have an NFL quarterback like they may, and you have, I think, a really good coach who's a defensive guy too, and we saw Boston College, you know, give Clemson fits a year ago. I think Boston College, I'm not telling you they're going to win the Atlantic or even be the runner-up, but they could beat some good teams. And then in the Coastal is always wide open. But you have Pittsburgh, who won the conference a year ago. You have Miami, who I think already year one of Mario Cristobal will be much improved. You have UNC, who we've been waiting for 4 years now to really take off under Mac Brown. Maybe this is the year when they have the least amount of pressure on them. And then even Virginia's interesting because you bring back a quarterback who was second in the nation last year in total yards, and now you give him an offensive coach, and his entire offensive line back, or actually the offensive line's gone, but you bring him, you give him all his weapons. I had that reversed. Right, Virginia offensively could be really intriguing. The ACC, I think, will be interesting this year. Does it lead to like a playoff team or an actual champion contender? I don't know, and that's the problem for these conferences. If you're not competing for the national championship, we really don't care. But the ACC, I think it could be deep. I think it could be interesting. I think it could even be a little unpredictable. I think it could be a lot of fun. Usually, it's clear-cut. Clemson's going to run the table and win it all, and they might this year. But I think NC State is going to be better than they have been. I think Miami's going to be better than they have been. We'll see if Wake Forest can follow up last year, which was like a historic season. We'll see if Pittsburgh can follow up their historic season. UNC may be better this year than they were last year. Virginia may be improved with a new coach. Louisville, I think, will be better than a year ago. Boston College could be better. So I do think the teams are improving. Clemson's coming back to the pack a little bit, we believe. And therefore, it creates a really interesting ACC. You look at the SEC, only four schools were picked to win the SEC in the preseason poll. You look at the ACC, nine schools. So again, we could have multiple takeaways that the top of the ACC may be better. Georgia, Alabama, you don't need to pick anybody else. Sure, that's the case. There is no Georgia and Alabama in the ACC. But I also think the ACC is more open, and it's also getting better and deeper and more interesting. And I think that could make for a fun year in the ACC this season. You can go find the full preseason poll online. Clemson picked to win the ACC by majority of voters once again. When we come back, it's time for Trent's Takes. It's the Moore Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Less than a week out from the Major League Baseball trade deadline. See what happens in the next few days. Usually doesn't heat up until, you know, the final hour, final minutes. Not literally the final hour. But the last, probably once we get to the weekend or through the weekend. Braves, Phillies right now scoreless as they play in the top of the fourth. Braves, Mets both won last night. It remains a two-game difference there in the NL East. And as outlined yesterday, that will be the most interesting race the rest of the way because of what's on the line. A chance to get a bye instead of playing a team like the Padres in the first round of the playoffs. And those two will play each other five times next week. So looking forward to that right after the trade deadline. Hey, we do it around this time each and every day. We find out what's on the mind of the producer. It's time now to get to Trent's Takes.
What's on the mind of the Morrow Midday Show producer?
Draft Luke Morrow.
That's Panther. Right.
It's time for Trent's Takes.
The Radio Cowboy will be coming, and he's coming soon, folks. Luke, have you caught any of Shark Week by chance? Have you tuned in to see what these big creatures are doing out in the ocean here?
I never watched Shark Week, but I actually did tune in last night for the first time because my guys, the Impractical Jokers, were involved.
Okay, yeah.
So I had to watch that.
Yeah, and so I saw that last night as well. I thought of you as soon as I saw they were out there. That was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my entire life. It started out so cool. They were going to send, I believe, who is it? That's Q, if I'm not mistaken. They sent him in the water to, look at sharks, and they went to an abandoned, shipwreck. And then it was an animated red devil shark that came out of the blue. That was one of the dumbest things I have ever seen. But I will say, the show after the Impractical Jokers got done, when they were talking about the great whites and the giant squid battles that are happening, I believe in Guadalupe, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
Yeah, there's just like massive squids and great white sharks fighting each other right now, and they have a bunch of scars and everything. But what are we doing with the Impractical Jokers? That was horrible.
Wow.
Horrible.
Wasn't their best work. I'll say I changed the channel as soon as that episode ended. I wasn't watching any more Shark Week. Some of it was entertaining, especially earlier on in the episode. A lot of their stuff, when they do scripted stuff, it's very corny.
Yeah.
And a lot of that last night was corny. They're better just like, when they do improv in their actual show. But tell you what, it worked. It got me to watch Shark Week. That's the only time I'm watching Shark Week. So the crossover, I guess, worked for at least one person.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the video that's going around on Twitter right now because it's Shark Week of how deep the ocean actually is. That's freaking a lot of people out. Freaked me out when I watched it last night about, 7 miles deep? We have no idea what's down there, ladies and gents. And especially after I watched these great white sharks and these, 10-foot squids going at it last night, I'm not a fan of the ocean any longer, Luke. I might just have to be a lake guy from here on out because Shark Week, this is what happens every year with Shark Week. I watch it, I enjoy it, but the sharks really freak me out. I will say, though, I don't know if I've asked you this. I wanted to get over, you know, a true fear of mine. I want to hop in a cage and just see a great white shark and have it come up to the cage. I want, because you know that classic scene, right? That the water's clear, there's nothing around, and then you just see a shadow a little bit away, and it's a 13-foot great white. My dad and I were talking about it last night. We want to go to South Africa, hop in Cape Cod, and go see one of these beasts live and in person. Would you ever cage dive?
No,
no. Not a chance?
No. And I was watching the Jokers do it a little bit last night, get into one of those cages, go underwater, and have the sharks come around. I would never do anything like that. The chance that something could – if there's ever a chance that something could go drastically wrong, just the chance, I'm out. Like, I'm not going to jump out of a plane because something could go wrong. I'm not going to get around a bunch of sharks because something could go wrong, and I would never put myself in that position.
I want to stare, you know, death and fear in the face.
No, that's what
I want to do because I'm terrified of them. So, like, if I get in there with the great white and see what happens, you know, and I'm just saying, as soon as I see it, I'm going to call on the little radio and say, pull me up. You know, I just need to see it in the water by itself because, you know, like, you got fish swimming around and everything, and then the fish just part, and it's a massive great white. I feel like that visual in the water in person might be one of the cooler things you could ever see.
I would say definitely not in a cage, but if you could tell me, like, I was in, I don't know if you could have a room underneath the water like that, but, like, if there was a glass window.
Ooh, okay.
And I could see out the window and see something like that happen, but not actually get face-to-face, and I'm inside some sort of structure, like maybe a submarine, I'd feel a little safer then. But no way am I going into, like, a cage where I could almost reach out and touch,
okay,
you know, the fish or the shark. I would never do that. But if you put me underwater with some big glass window separating us and I'm inside, like, a actual structure, maybe I'd do that.
Yeah, you know, but looping it back, I was incredibly disappointed with the Jokers and their performance. It was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen in my entire life. And you know, they were building it up, and it got me, my brother, and my dad. We're all sitting there watching it, having a good time. My brother's in town. We're watching Shark Week. It's a lot of fun. And then they end it with an animated shark in the water. Horrible acting. I was incredibly disappointed because I'm a big Sal Vulcano guy. I enjoy the Jokers, so that was a little tough to watch, Luke. But, hey, what can you do? It's Shark Week. It's becoming kitschier and kitschier,
yeah,
every single year, and I really dislike that. Let me just see the great whites jumping out of the water getting at the seals. You know what I'm saying? That's what I need. Luke, I saw this on Instagram last night, and I really wanted to get your opinion on it because it's a phenomenal question. Which is more likely to happen here? TJ Watt winning his third straight sack, you know, being the leader in the NFL for sacks, or Aaron Rodgers' third straight MVP? Which one is more likely as of right now?
Oh, that is a good question. I would say Watt. I feel like when it comes to MVP in all sports, there's a little bit of it becomes a little bit of like a narrative or storyline award, and I almost feel like that would actually work against Rodgers, where a lot of times we see like Phil Jackson. I don't know if he ever won Coach of the Year. Like you hold it against people when it comes to the awards. Ah, he already won the last two. Let's give it to somebody else. I think that comes into it more than the idea of a voter saying, "Yeah, it would be great if Rodgers got it three times in a row." Whereas the sacks, it's just whoever goes out there and gets the most sacks. There's nobody in control of that award or that label. There's no sort of narrative or storyline. So I think that's just simply based off of performance. I think Watt leading the league in sacks would be more likely than the voters even wanting to give Rodgers a third straight MVP.
Well, I would have said what you said, but last year with the whole immunized situation and lying to the media and all that stuff, they still voted him MVP.
True.
He was the best player in football, and if he is that again, I don't see a world where they don't, you know, have him as the MVP as of right now. But who knows? Because last year, I remember joking on one of the shows. I said, well, he's never going to win an MVP again because there's no way they're going to vote him. And bada bing, bada boom, he wins his fourth one after having an incredible regular season. So I would say as of right now, Aaron Rodgers winning that fifth MVP, third in a row, solely because of that video yesterday,
yeah.
Quite honestly. I mean, that just fired every single Packers fan up. There's no doubt about it. Con Rodgers, I mean, the guy is an absolute machine.
If he wins the award, he has to show up to the presentation by landing a plane
on the Vegas Strip.
On the Vegas Strip.
Yeah, they got to have it at the Bellagio, and he's going to come in and land a plane and then walk out, you know, slow-mo, and he's just going to accept the award and say, put the award in the box.
That's
and
right.
Then move on. Bada
and they're going to play that great song that I love.
Oh, yeah. Wait, which song?
a song from Con Air. I can't even think of what it's called off the top of my head, but it's a great song.
We're going to have to play it next. Luke, Jerry Jones might be one of the best people in the world. I love every single time he gets on the microphone. And when he was talking about Mike McCarthy, it was absolutely hilarious yesterday. He basically said, look, I got plenty of options to be the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, but I believe in Mike McCarthy. I was going to ask you, do you think he actually believes in Mike McCarthy to be successful this season, or was Sean Payton kind of trying to enjoy it? Because that's what everybody assumes, right? That Sean Payton will be the next head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Picture it in your mind right now. He's wearing the Cowboys hat. He's got the sweater on. He's absolutely loving it. Dak Prescott's his quarterback, no doubt about it. Do you think Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones actually believe in Mike McCarthy? Because personally, I don't think they do, and they're just holding on one more year until they can sign Sean Payton as their next head football coach.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think he believes in it. I'll say this about Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones has built this reputation of being like a George Steinbrenner, but really, Jones has been a lot more patient with his guys than Steinbrenner ever was. So maybe he will, you know, keep McCarthy around. But I'm with you that you don't say you believe in somebody by then following it up with all your options.
Right.
You don't say, like, you love your girlfriend, but, hey, if things don't work out, I could date this person. Like, you know, if you're really into that person, you're not talking about the options that you could turn to in the next couple of months. You're all in with the person you have. So I think Jerry Jones, by saying that, is telling you, number one, he's thought about it, obviously, these other guys, what he would do. He knows the talent he has around him. And then if you're going to list out those guys, you must not be all in on McCarthy if you're going to, in the same breath, follow it up with who could replace him next year anyway. So, yeah, McCarthy, I haven't looked. I would guess he probably has the best odds to be the first coach fired this year.
Matt Rhule. Right now. Yeah, plus 300.
Both guys certainly on the hot seat this year. Yeah, McCarthy, no doubt, he's got to prove himself.
Imagine Jerry Jones going up to his wife and being like, honey, let me tell you something. I got options. Yeah. I got choices.
Yeah, right.
You know
what
I'm saying? That's basically what he said to Mike McCarthy, but then said, but I believe in him.
Yeah.
I believe we could be a playoff team. Jerry Jones, best soundbite in the NFL outside of Mike Tomlin. Not even close. Last one here, Luke, and I also saw this on the internet, and I was very interested in it. Who is the most important player for the Panthers this season? Is it Christian McCaffrey? Is it Baker Mayfield? Potentially DJ Moore? Ikem Ekwonu, their new rookie? Sam Darnold? Who do you think right now is the most important player? Because I personally think it's Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield right now is the most important player on the Carolina Panthers, even though people are already reporting that he's taking second team reps and the internet's up in arms.
I usually go quarterback for all teams, but I do think the Panthers are an exception. I think it is McCaffrey.
Mm.
I think McCaffrey makes Baker's job easier, can make him better, where vice versa. I don't think Baker has the same impact on McCaffrey. And if McCaffrey's healthy, I think he's the biggest weapon they have and the biggest thing for the Panthers. When he's been injured, they've gone 3-17 the last 20 games he's missed. He's been injured the last 2 years, and they've been a terrible team. So I think McCaffrey, if you tell me he's going to be healthy all 17 games and he's going to play like he did a few years ago, I would take that over Baker Mayfield plays how he does or how he did 2 years ago. I'd rather have a top-performing McCaffrey than a top-performing Baker, because I think McCaffrey will impact Baker and make him better, you know, by proxy. So I say McCaffrey.
Over-under right now, how many games is McCaffrey playing this season?
Yeah, it's a good question.
10. I'm going to go under 10. I don't think he plays a full season once again for the third straight year.
Yeah, I'd probably go under. It's hard. The guy has been he's missed 20 of the last 33 games. I can't expect him to get healthier this year. I think he'll miss the majority of this year too, probably, unfortunately. Which is my concern for Derrick Henry. A lot of these guys, right?
Yeah.
You don't get healthier as you get older. Once you injure one thing, that could be the snowball effect. So for McCaffrey, yeah, he's been so banged up. It's been a series of different things. I'm not going to assume that all of a sudden he's going to be fine and get through, especially at that position, taking all those hits. I cannot assume he's going to get through 17 games this year.
And we talk about Derrick Henry. We actually talked about this off air, like a big guy like that. Remember when Kevin Durant injured his foot for the first time and he broke his foot? We all said he's done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Derrick Henry had a foot injury last year at 6'4", you know, 240 playing running back. I don't know how you improve from there. You're going to kind of be banged up for the rest of your career, and he's already been in the league, 4 or 5 years? So in running back years, he's got about two more before he starts a significant decline.
Yeah, in high school, it was a talking point when he was coming into the draft. It's gone viral. I remember Colin Cowherd said, I'm not going to touch him in the draft because of already the amount of work that was put on him, with the amount of carries he got even in high school and then in college at Alabama. And now, after a few years here in the NFL, he's been a real workhorse, now has an injury. So I got a lot of concerns about Derrick Henry. But taking it back to the original question, it's the same idea with McCaffrey. Smaller running back. He's already got all sorts of injuries. I don't think suddenly he's going to go through this year and just have perfect health. He's going to be dealing with injuries, and I would imagine he's not going to get through the year once again, unfortunately. Which is why, if you want to go back years ago, I said on this show that before they gave him the contract, I said I would trade him now. I would not want to extend McCaffrey. I do not trust his health long term, and unfortunately, I've been proven correct here the last couple years. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Wrapping up hour two. Hey, we were just talking about Shark Week last segment and the crazy things you could see in the ocean and how I would want to stay away. On Twitter, Steven said that you can do that. Go to an aquarium in regards to what I said about how I wouldn't want to go into a cage, but put me in like some sort of structure with a big glass window. Now, I haven't been to an aquarium in years. I have to plead ignorance. Can I go to an aquarium and see, like, some sort of crazy sharks going around?
Yeah, you know, little sharks. You ain't going to see any great whites, you know, floating around the Charleston Aquarium. I believe they have an albino crocodile, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh.
So you can see that, a genetic mutation of, you know, American science there.
I'm intrigued. I was never a big aquarium guy. I was never big into any of that. Like, you go to the zoo as a kid on a field trip or with your family. Never a big fan of the zoo. Aquariums. Always kind of boring.
You're a big animal rights guy. Good for you.
Yeah,
good
that's
for
right. You. Exactly. That's the reason. I remember we went on one trip to Washington, D.C. just to go to, like, museums and see all the history. And as a kid, oh, my goodness. That was brutal. I was never into that stuff. Take me to a ballpark instead. That's a good vacation or field trip. Yes, that'd be one thing I would do. I'll go to an aquarium and look through a big glass window where I feel safe. As opposed to actually going some sort of cage underwater to go look at some sharks. No, thank you. Hour three coming up. We'll get back towards college football. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.